Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and I am your host, Sheena Metal. We're at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. We're at LATalkRadio.com. Of course, we're live on LA Talk Radio every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m., and it's our absolute pleasure to be here broadcasting from such a wonderful radio station. Raising the Vibration is an offshoot of a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity that I started on November 9th of 2016 called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And you can find us at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. Please join us. We would love that. We also have a wonderful online community that's just about to hit 12,000 strong in the last couple of months. And it's TheVibrationNation.com. Go and find us there. Post your thoughts, your wishes, hopes, dreams, love. Every week on the show, I feature somebody that I love and adore that is always trying to make the world a better place. And that's what our entire movement is about, putting more joy, positivity, optimism, and happiness into a world that really, really, really needs it. And my guest today is certainly no exception. He's a wonderfully talented actor, writer, martial artist, just all-around fantastic, loving man, and that's why he's here, because I adore him. Please welcome to Raising the Vibration, the wonderful Hank Garrett. How are you, my friend? It's long overdue for you to be here on this show.
Absolutely. I missed you so much.
I missed you, too. I see you all the time, but you haven't been in studio with me in a while. Hank's been a guest on my daily Sheena Metal Experience show here, but when I saw you at Christmas, at our annual Christmas haunt,
yes.
I really wanted to get you on this show because
you.
There is a lovely gentleness about you, and you have a remarkable story, and that's kind of what you just belong right here on the show. You're always raising the vibration everywhere you are, my friend.
Oh, you have that, and I try.
So why don't you tell my listeners, because it's your first time on this show, just a little bit about your background. I mean, everybody, of course, knows you from films and from Car 54, Where Are You? And all the wonderful things that you've done. But I think what people don't understand is that you sort of had a moment in your life where you made a conscious decision to go in one direction and not another.
Yeah, I'm from the streets of Harlem. I actually lived on the street. Slept in cardboard boxes a number of times. And this is when I was quite young. I was a hoodlum. I was always in trouble. My mom and dad were pushcart peddlers. They sold fruits and vegetables. And a gentleman that was a customer of my mom's was the mayor of Harlem. His name was Willie Bryant. And she was crying to him that I was always in trouble, which was true. I started martial arts when I was 11. Wrong reason. I wanted to be a better fighter,
okay,
than a street fighter, but I learned humility and respect instead. Sammy Davis Jr. got me off the street. Mr. Bryant brought me to Sammy Davis Jr. And he said, Sammy said to me, the way you're going, you're either going to go to prison or you're going to die. And I was not quite 13, and I had pistol in my pocket at the time.
Wow.
And he got me. I was a band boy with an all-black orchestra. And I said, what's a band boy? He said, well, do you put the music and the charts out for all the musicians? And at the end of the gig, Lucky Millinder was the band. He was the band leader. He gave me $50. He said, get yourself some new kicks, shoes.
Wow.
My shoes were torn to shreds.
Yeah.
And I gave my mother $35, and that's more money than she had seen all month, selling fruits and vegetables. They got me a job. Soon thereafter, I was a comedian at 16, working the Catskills. At 17, I was wrestling professionally. And I had to have a phony birth certificate in order to get a license. 20 smart years later, I was Tony Bennett's opening act. And in the audience at the Sands was Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra, and Dean Martin.
Wow.
Sammy came after, came up to me after the show, and he said, "Hey, man, you're a funny cat. Where do I know you from?" And I said, "You don't remember me." He said, "No, man, where do I know you from?" I said, "I'm the kid that you said was going to go to prison or die." And we both cried.
Wow.
Changed my life.
Wow.
And I know quite well, because due to my manager, Deanna Marie, she had gotten me into children's institutions, children that were awaiting prison or sentencing. And I've been talking to those kids. My son spent most of his life in prison. My son finally got out of prison, got himself a job as a welder. First check he got, he bought a motorcycle, and he was killed at 34. And I made a decision. I couldn't save him, but I'm going to try to save some other kids.
Good for you. Let's go back a little bit, sweetheart.
Sure.
Tell me why you think you were a kid that got into trouble. Was it because your parents were never around? Was you that was part of it?
I didn't know who I was. One time I got a look at my birth certificate, and there were four last names on my birth certificate. My father was in the country illegally.
Okay. Hence all the names.
He assumed my mother's married name. He met my mom.
Okay.
He was a delivery truck driver.
Okay.
Met my mom. She was a widow.
Okay.
She had two sons.
But not you yet.
Not me.
Okay.
And they lived together. I was born out of wedlock.
Okay.
And I jokingly say, "Oh, wedlock is a town 60 miles north of New York City." So, I was born, and one time, I was about 5 or 6 years old. I was standing near the push cart that my folks sold vegetables out of, and a woman came over to my mom and said, "Is that your little boy?" And she said, "Oh, no, 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 that's my grandson." She was embarrassed that I was born so late in her life.
Really?
I was born to her. She was in mid or late 40s.
Okay.
And then when I was about 15 years old, census taker came to the house. My father was at the door talking to the census taker, and he said, "How many in the family?" And he said, "Four, woman and her three kids." And he said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm an uncle." So my mother kept saying she's my grandmother, and my father said he was my uncle. I said, "Who the heck am I?"
But do you think any of that is true? Do you think that maybe there weren't your parents?
For the while, yeah, sure.
Because there are strange things that we don't tell each other. Back then, people didn't talk, right? So you'd have a kid late in life. Turned out that was actually your grandkid. I mean, that happened a lot, but that you would hide that and say, "That's my child." But the truth is, if your young daughter got pregnant, you would say it was. You would take the child and say it was yours. I mean, all kinds of funky things happen.
Oh, I understand. But when you're on your own, I turned out to be the only white kid in the neighborhood.
Sure.
And I fought everybody. I fought everybody. I was always angry.
Yeah.
Hungry and angry.
Yeah.
One cold, cold evening, I was walking down the street, shivering, and I heard music coming out of a store with the blackened out windows. And I approached, and a man opened the front door, and he looked at me and said, "What are you doing, son?" And I said, "Nothing. I heard the music. It was gospel." And he said, "Are you hungry?" And I said, "Yeah." And he invited me in. And he said, "Eat as much as you want." And it was tons of food and people clapping and singing. And he said, "If you're hungry, you can get. I'll give you some food to take home." And he looked at me and he said, "What's your name?" And I told him, and I said, "Who are you?" He said, "My name is Father Divine." And he was a minister. And I never forgot that. It's the first time in my life I saw so much food. and I could have as much as I wanted. Even today, we go somewhere, and if there's a lot of food, I'm the first in line.
My mom was the same way. My mom grew up the same way. She would tell a story when she was still alive. She was born in Louisville, and I went to Louisville to host a paranormal convention, and I literally had her in my Bluetooth, and she helped me find her neighborhood by me just saying, "Do you know this street? Do you know that street?" And I mean, she hadn't lived there since she was 11, and I passed a White Castle, and she said, "Oh, that's the White Castle by where I grew up," and told me the story that when she was, so she lived in like a boxcar house and a little shotgun house, and there were 10 of them living in the house. There were my mom, her the five aunts, my grandmother and the four aunts, their uncle and their parents. So great grandparents, my great uncle, my grandmother, and her five kids. Six, but the little boy died. So they would give my mom 50 cents, and they would send her in the middle of the night to walk across Louisville, which can be tough. That in those neighborhoods, it's talking about the Irish ghetto in Louisville, to get for 50 cents you could get 10 White Castles.
Exactly.
And that was their luxury. They would each have a White Castle. Well, you know, White Castles are like 2 inches by 2 inches. And that's all they had to eat. And that was a splurgy day to be able to get the White Castles.
Oh, we used to save the coupons. They had White Castle coupons.
Yeah.
And you get five hamburgers for a quarter.
Yes. Exactly, and that's what that was their big splurge. But so yeah, I know what it's like from her stories to grow up and not have anything to eat.
Oh yeah, in fact, one of the jokes that I do in my act, I said I miss New York because it was a sense of family and warmth that I'd never seen anywhere else in the world. For example, any given morning, my grandmother and grandfather would get up, then my mother and father would get up. Then my aunt Rose and Uncle Charlie would get up. Then my cousin Seymour and my cousin Ruth would get up. Then my brother Murray and my brother Sol would get up. And before you know it, I had that whole bed to myself. I said, I never slept alone till I got married.
But it's true. My mom, too. She grew up and all five of the girls would sleep in a bed together.
Oh, yes.
And they'd put her along the bottom because she was the little one. They'd all sleep vertically, and she'd sleep horizontally at the bottom.
Oh, absolutely.
And you were just thankful to have a place to sleep.
Oh. My father became a guardian to two kids. They were in the country illegally, and they were being bullied in school. And I, myself and another friend, we were the two biggest ones in school, we got the guy who was bullying them, and I told my father about these two kids, Vinny and Charlie Falcone. Somehow or other, he contacted their father, who was in the country illegally, and he was being kicked out. And my father said, "Listen, where are you going with these kids?" And he said, "We don't know." He said, "I'm taking them. When you find a place to live, I'll send the kids back to you." My father became their guardian.
Wow.
And the three of us, Vinny, Charlie, and myself, sleeping in one bed, in a single bed.
Yeah. Even though you didn't have much to eat, now you got two other people
exactly.
to feed.
And my father said, five can starve as easily as three.
Wow.
And so there was five of us.
Wow.
My two older brothers were in the military.
So was it a culture shock for you when you went to start working at the club and suddenly you had in one night more money than your family had seen in a month?
It was amazing.
I mean, has it been throughout your life hard for you to keep control of money?
Yeah.
Or do you feel like when you get money, like, oh, I got to spend it because I need food and I need new shoes and just I got to spend that money?
It was picnic time. If
right.
Hank's got it, you eat.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody. And unfortunately, my mom and dad had passed when I started doing Car 54. I had been on Car 54. And my aunt, most of the scenes on Car 54, I was always in a T-shirt flexing. I was the muscle kid. And so my Aunt Rose said to my mother, "Why is he always in his underwear? Can't they find a nice shirt for him to wear?"
Oh, that's fantastic. But your parents got to see it.
Well, my father didn't.
Okay.
He had passed. But,
did they ever come see you do comedy?
No.
Really?
Never did. Most of the comedy I did was up in the Catskills.
Yeah.
In fact, coming back from the Catskills, I was in this terrible automobile accident, and I was in a hospital in upstate New York, and my mother and father would take a bus to come visit me in the hospital.
Wow.
And they traveled all day long, and oh my God.
How long were you in the hospital?
13 and a half months.
Wow.
I was in a body cast for 8.5 months.
Wow. Full body cast.
Yeah.
Wow.
And my cousin Seymour, was a nutritionist. The day after the accident, he was at the hospital. I don't even know how he found out. And he brought a box of supplements. And they were going to have him arrested because he was practicing medicine without a license.
I was just going to say, that was before we really talked about supplements that much.
Exactly.
Was this in the 50s?
This was in the late 50s.
Wow.
And so he...
He was way ahead of his time.
Oh, God, yes. But they confiscated the supplements.
Oh.
So he came back the next day with a box of candy about the size of this table. And he said, it's candy. Give the candies to the nurses. You do not have any of the sugar. And the supplements are on the bottom layer.
Oh, smart.
I was popping and he had...
So he knew at that time that sugar was poison.
He was an amazing guy.
Wow.
And there were pulley weights because I was in traction. And he said, we use the pulley weights to work out. And I was doing curls, and I was doing everything possible for resistance to keep the muscles from atrophying.
You're lucky you could move your arms. Could you move your legs?
Barely.
Okay.
Had ribs go through my lung.
Oh.
So it was a mess.
Yeah.
And I was engaged to be married at that time. We had sent out invitations. I was getting married in September. The accident was in August. I was paid a visit by my future mother-in-law, returning the engagement ring.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they heard I'd never walk again.
Oh, they thought you were damaged.
Damaged
goods.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want that.
No, please. Well,
did they not even want to wait and find out?
Not for a minute.
Wow. And you never heard from your betrothed, almost?
Revenge is sweet.
Oh.
I wound up doing Car 54, Where Are You? And as a limo was taking me to the studio, there was my ex-fiance, part of the crowd that was greeting us.
Oh.
And as I stepped out of the limo and I was signing autographs, and she stood there with her mouth wide open, and I looked up and I said, oh, would you care for an autograph?
Wow.
She just turned around and ran the other way.
I just want to say that we're 20 minutes into the show, and the Scorpio has mentioned revenge for the first time. And I love that about you. Since I had a Scorpio mother who I worshipped, I think of revenge in a positive way. But, right, there is karma. But what a horrible thing to do, to walk away from somebody.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even if they weren't going to walk, and even if you were a complete douche and you were going to go, you can at least wait till they get out of the hospital to let them know.
Oh, it was horrendous.
Wow.
Spent so many nights in misery, crying. I could not believe.
Oh, honey.
Well, my first night at the hospital, two interns were talking right near my bed, and one of them said, if he lives, he'll never walk. And I was determined.
Good for you.
Oh, God, was I determined.
Good. Maybe that was a good thing. Maybe that person did you a favor.
Probably did.
Yeah, what is, I mean, I know that we have a different idea, I think, with each passing decade of what medical ethics should be. And one of my best friends is a nurse, and I'm sure she would scream if she heard a story like that. But I hear stories like that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend who was very, very sick from AIDS, and they were trying to get Medi-Medi for him so that he could have the insurance coverage. And at one point, he heard a nurse or a doctor or somebody say, just give him the Medi-Medi. He'll be dead in 3 or 4 days anyhow.
Oh.
Why would you say that in front of somebody? But I think we just don't, we don't think. And one of the things that is sort of a part of the passion behind this movement is to just make people adjust their thinking a little bit. You know, you don't have to give up all your worldly possessions and go, you know, work, go live in an ashram or go volunteer for the Peace Corps if you don't want to. You're allowed to live your life and have your stuff. But think before you speak.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it takes 2 seconds out of your day to think, maybe I shouldn't say that in front of somebody who probably can hear me. And, you know, whereas it made you fight, Hank, it might have made somebody else just die. Somebody else might have thought, well, I'm going to die anyhow. And we're learning so much now about how the will to live is how much of whether you live or die in a situation
like
that.
Oh, absolutely. When we speak to the kids, the looks on their faces, they don't know who I am or ever heard anything about me. And thanks to Deanna Marie, she presents a video of Car 54.
It's nice.
And they play the video for these kids. And then I walk out. Now they're in a good mood. They're laughing at something that they'd never seen before. And I had one little girl, I mean, a toughie. She had sat there with her arms crossed and glaring at me when I first walked out. And then we had a question and answer afterwards. And I was signing autographs. And as she walked up to me, Mr. Garrett, but I noticed as I was speaking to her, the arms came down.
Yeah.
And she walked over and said, you're freaking funny.
That's awesome.
That is one compliment I will never forget.
That's fantastic.
Oh, what a feeling.
But how important that those are all kids that could have been you.
Oh,
and that were you.
They were, absolutely. I was in so many fights and took so many beatings. And I got involved in the martial arts.
Right, to stop getting the crap beat out of you on the street.
Yeah, I could fight back now.
But when you suddenly were in a place where you were working in a club and then you were doing comedy and you were opening for big names and you had money, were you emotionally and spiritually resolved inside yourself? Or inside of yourself, were you still that angry, tough kid? Just now you had food and you had a roof over your head, but were you still angry?
I started to lose the anger. I started losing the anger when I started doing shows, autograph shows in particular, and sending the proceeds to the veterans, the wounded vets.
But how long ago was that?
God.
So you had the anger for a long time.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
I mean, well into your adulthood, you still had that anger.
In fact, at one point, I went to Vietnam, and I was frontline entertainment. I volunteered.
Good for you.
And they said to me, why? And my answer was, why not?
Yeah.
And they said, you know the risk you're taking? You're frontline entertainment. It's not like Bob Hope was behind the lines.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. It's not like you're in Germany.
Exactly, yes.
Where people stop over on their way there. Yeah, right.
So I said, look, if these kids can do it,
yeah,
why can't I? And an analyst once said to me, you just wanted to take chances, didn't you? I said, I did all my life because I saw so much death on the streets.
Yeah.
So that didn't bother me.
That's wonderfully courageous, though.
Oh.
I admire. I could never. I'm horribly claustrophobic, and I could never do it. But I have friends that are in all-girl bands, that go out there and go to the Middle East, and they put them in Black Hawks, and they fly them out somewhere, and they stick them in tanks, and
yes.
people are shooting at them. And I mean, that's ballsy. That's amazing. I've done USO stuff, but only domestically because I'm a travel pussy, and I will admit that. But I admire you for doing that. How did the accident change you? Not just the actual accident, right? I mean, did you die? Did you have a near-death experience? Do you know?
I didn't know the extent of the injury.
Okay.
We were coming back from the Catskills, myself and a boy singer, and we had done three shows, three different hotels. And instead of staying over, we decided to drive back.
Okay.
He fell asleep while he was driving.
Okay.
And we jumped the island to the oncoming traffic.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And there was a truck coming at us. And we pulled over to what he thought was a level side. From the road, it looked level. But it was a 40-foot drop. And we dropped. I guess before I hit the bottom, I was thrown out of the car. There were no seatbelts. And I wound up wrapped around a tree backwards. And I kept thinking, wow, what a horrendous dream this is. I've got to wake up.
And is that how you punctured your lung? Was a branch?
Yes.
Oh.
Not the branch, my ribs.
Oh, okay.
Went through my lung. And I just didn't know. And I lost the fear. I wasn't afraid. I just kept saying, this is a god-awful dream. I've got to wake up. And they had picked him up. My friend who was killed.
Yeah.
And they didn't see me. I was wrapped around this tree, and a little kid who lived in one of the houses said to the screen that pointed and said, there's a man in the tree. And the woman, I guess his mother, called the ambulance, and they climbed up the tree and got me. And when I got to the hospital, it didn't hit me until I heard, he's not going to walk. I wanted to throw myself out of a window.
They never should have said that to you.
They were very nonchalant about the conversation.
Yeah.
So
something I think we still, and we've gotten much better in the medical profession, but we still have a ways to go. Somebody in a crisis, in a spiritual, emotional, physiological crisis, and all those things are happening at one time when you're in trauma, does not need to be told every medical possibility and scenario.
Oh, absolutely.
You just need to get them better, and then you can start worrying about it.
Yes.
Mostly because you just don't know. You have no idea who's going to walk and who isn't going to walk.
Well, you know something, and it was, the streets were like that. Coming home from school, a bunch of kids, and we were just walking down the street, and one of the kids tripped. We thought he tripped. He had been shot.
Oh.
He was shot from a roof. Because we laughed when he fell,
sure.
thinking he was so clumsy, and that was the kind of life we led.
Yeah.
So it became kind of a day-by-day situation. We witnessed all these things all the time. And how did we survive? We don't know. I wound up going, later on in life, going to analysts, find out how was I affected by this?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure.
I'm still affected.
You have PTSD.
Oh.
I mean, you have PTSD. I have it from the accident I was in. I'm sure you have it from that.
Sure.
How old were you when you were in the accident?
Boy. Well, 13 months in the hospital total, but completely cured.
Right.
Well,
but I mean, how old were you when it happened?
Oh boy, it was early late teens, because I got onto car 54. You see, I had that phony birth certificate.
Right.
I had churned. Just 18 when
wow.
I was doing car 54.
Oh, my God. So you were a teenager when you were in that
I was
accident.
A cop. I got on the police force.
And you were doing comedy in the Catskills on your days off? Wow. And they let you join the police force and you weren't 18 yet?
Because I had this phony birth certificate.
Okay. So the birth certificate made you seem older.
Oh, completely. When I was doing car 54, I never looked like a kid.
Right.
And one time when we jokingly talk about it, I said, when I was 11 years old, I was going to a movie theater. And the guy, the manager said, "No, what do you want to buy in a kid's ticket?" I said, "I'm a kid, I'm 11. He said, "Right. Next time, bring your wife and your kids."
Oh, that's fantastic.
I had to pay a full senior ticket.
That's it. I had the same thing when I was 11. I was visiting my grandmother, and all her friends would come and ask me, "Oh, are you at Vassar like your grandmother?" I said, I'm 10. Nobody would believe it.
No,
I always looked older when I was little. And then now I think I look younger than I am. So I switched in the best possible way. So how old were you supposed to be on Car 54? Like 25?
No, in fact, they got me listed as 10 years older.
Oh, okay. So you were 18, you're supposed to be 28.
So they thought I was 28 years old.
And well, that's good. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten the role had they known how young you were.
They would, absolutely. Because I was the baby on the show.
So if your birth certificate was phony, are you sure that's your birthday? I mean, are you sure about, do you know what year you were born?
I don't know who I
am. Well, we know you're a Scorpio because you've already mentioned revenge twice. So you definitely were born in November or October.
October 26th.
Yeah, definitely.
My legitimate, it was 1941.
Okay. So you do know how old you are.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Maybe you looked 11. Maybe you were really 18.
Oh,
and no. Just nobody told you.
Oh,
that's a fantastic story.
Oh,
how did the accident change you?
I never drove. Every time I got in a car, I started to shake.
Do you still not drive?
I tried driving. I got my license. But a couple of times I saw the accident in front of my face.
Oh, yeah. I see mine all the time.
Do you?
Yeah. Mine, I was on the freeway, and I was in the right lane, and I was heading down the way, and I passed an exit, and a guy in a delivery truck who was in the far left lane realized that he missed his exit, so he cut perpendicular across traffic and almost hit me. I swerved to miss him, and the car jackknifed and flew into the sound wall. So when I'm driving down the freeway, and down the street, and you know how people will pull up into that middle lane, and I see them out of my periphery, I still am like, huh. And I mean, it's been 27 years.
Wow.
But I think that will always trigger me, because suddenly there's somebody in my peripheral vision, and they're coming at me. They'll always freak me out. So you've never really been a driver.
No. If I did drive at one point. I was driving my son to school, and something happened, and I froze. And I parked the car, and I called my then wife and said, "Come get us."
Wow.
And she came and got
it. I don't blame you.
And I had somebody drive the car home, and I never drove again.
Wow.
I could see it so clearly, because when we hit the divider, it woke us, and all I saw was flying through the air,
mm-hmm.
and the crash. I saw us going through the air, and then saw the car going down.
Wow.
And that's what I kept seeing. Every once in a while, I'd get behind the wheel, and I went to a hypnotist, and thinking that would help. And it didn't work.
Yeah. That's a lot. It's a lot to deal with. It's like a war flashback, right? I mean, it is. It's a trauma flashback.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I won't get in the car with people who've been drinking. Because why? I don't drink. So why not let me drive? And, you know, people always want to, they always want to drink, especially when they're drunk.
Oh, I know.
And if I even think somebody's going to be drinking, I'm like, why don't you just let me drive? And then you can drink all you want. People get kind of weirded out, because even on dates and stuff, I'm like, look, if you're going to drink, I'm going to drive. And I'm sure that makes me weird, but why? Drink all you want then and just sit in the passenger seat. I'm not freaking out about it. It's not like I'm a disgruntled designated driver. I never drank anyhow, so I don't care. But people, but now what worries me is everybody's on opioids, right?
Oh.
And everyone's on marijuana. So people don't think that, well, I don't drink, but you're like, you know, sauced out of your mind on Oxycontin all the time. So when I travel, one of my travel things is if we rent a car, it's in my name, and I drive. because I'm not going to be driving down some southern road in Mississippi with somebody jacked out of their mind on muscle relaxants. It's just not going to happen. I'm not going to. Oh. I will never be in another accident. The funny thing is, I've been in two other major accidents in my life.
Oh.
But none of them. Once I was driving down the road and a guy was fighting with his soon-to-be ex-wife on the phone and wasn't looking, flew out of a driveway and T-boned me and totaled my car. And last year, I was sitting dead stopped in traffic on the 605 and somebody wasn't looking and rammed into me at full speed.
Oh.
But those I can't avoid because I was in control and it just happens. Sometimes, you know, shit just happens. But I won't get in a car with somebody who's on something. And you don't know what somebody's on now. It was easy to tell when people were drunk. They slurred. They smelled like alcohol. You could tell. But now everybody's on something and you can't tell.
Oh, it's amazing.
And I just don't. But just for that same reason. And I don't fall asleep in cars with people. Because I'm scared exactly that thing will happen.
I was performing on a cruise ship, and I was invited to the captain's table.
Okay.
I was, you know, the headline.
That's right. You were fancy pants.
So, and he had a few drinks.
Okay.
And I said, excuse me, the captain's drink? Who's the designated driver?
Exactly, right? Well, I think luckily with the captain, I think there's like five or six other captains.
Oh, absolutely.
And everybody's backing each other up, so.
Yes, when I saw that and the captain, he said, I'm not touching another drink with Mr. Garrett.
Right. What scares me is when you see the guys come on the airplane.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, okay, who's coked up on the airplane? Because I remember the stories from the 70s of friends of mine who, oh, my brother's a pilot, and he, you know, he does all the coke he wants, and then he has a doctor write a note saying he had nasal surgery. And I'm like, okay, I know, thank you.
Oh.
But I can't do anything about it because sometimes you just have to put your fate in the hands of the gods, as my mama used to say. And just live with it. But I can control who I get in a car with.
Wonderful.
So it's weird we have that same experience.
Yes.
Did you become a more spiritual person from that? Or a more fatalistic person? Were you a spiritual person before?
No, I've become more spiritual since I've been with Deanna Marie. I really have.
I think that's wonderful.
We go to different churches, synagogues and churches.
Beautiful.
Because God is everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it's a wonderful experience.
And that was really the first time that you explored all of that?
Oh, yeah. I I'd never had a bar mitzvah.
Sure.
My father's idea of, he bought a bottle of Carstairs whiskey and handed out shots to friends.
Okay, that was bar mitzvah?
That was the celebration of my bar mitzvah.
Right.
So we, yeah, it's. I enjoy
it. It's nice, right? Because
yeah,
I would think
wonderful.
That a good Scorpio like you, it's a very spiritual sign. But did you live as a spiritual person, even though you didn't know you were a spiritual person? I mean, was there like an energy in you where you were doing good for people? And
I had gotten very angry at one point. My dad, I think he was my dad.
we're not quite sure about any of this now.
And it was the Jewish holidays.
Okay.
And he went to a temple, and he came back, he was in tears. And the first time, you know, he had one suit to his name, and he was in tears. And I said, what, you know, my mother said, what's the matter? And he said, they wouldn't let me in because I didn't have a ticket.
You have to have a ticket to go to synagogue?
Yes, for the high holidays.
Oh, okay. That's a ticketed event.
And I could not believe you could not go and worship God unless you bought a ticket.
Hmm.
And he said, well, how else are we going to support the temple? I said, by donation?
Yeah.
And so I was very, very turned off.
Yeah, I understand that.
For the longest time.
I understand that. Yeah. There's I understand how easy it is to get disillusioned from organized religion.
The funny thing is, now, once I got a little recognition, I don't need a ticket anymore.
And isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
How you can just go into these.
Yes, please join us.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I don't ever need a ticket for anything either, and I realize how very lucky I am. that I get just walked into things.
Yes.
It's very interesting how we differentiate in our country. And it's becoming worse, right? Since our last presidential election, it's becoming worse. Now, somebody like Oprah makes a speech last night.
Oh,
and everyone's
I
know. Like, oh, Oprah for president. Like, oh, just anybody famous person, Oprah for president. And what about all these people that have studied their entire lives from high school? They've studied to be politicians and be our government. And now all we want is the next TV star we can find.
Yes.
You know, oh, George Clooney, let's have George Clooney. Look, I love George Clooney, and I think he's amazing, and I'm sure he'd be a great president. But how about, like, somebody who's actually, like, done some stuff? But that's our society, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you famous enough for this? Or it's like when you'd go to amusement parks as a kid, and it'd be like, are you tall enough to ride this ride? It's like, are you famous enough to ride this ride?
Exactly.
And everything's become about, do you know enough people to get into this? Are you recognizable enough to get into this? And it used to just be our business was like that, the entertainment business. But now our entire country has become like that.
Yep.
Do you have enough Twitter followers to be let into this event? It's crazy. But it's a whole new way to have to live it in a strange way. It's like a lot of the old Twilight Zones have kind of come true.
Oh.
In the way that people treat each other, and it's a little scary.
It's frightening, because we're gonna, you know, whoever is gonna be running the country next.
Right. I hope they're famous, because we only like famous people in this
exactly.
country. My God, we would have kicked Abraham Lincoln out on his ass. This guy's too tall. He's not good looking enough. He's poor, and he's not famous at all.
Here he is, President Pluto.
Exactly. Right. Anybody we can get, as long as there's somebody we know. It's a little scary. But, wow. But you know, it's. But I think that has always been in society. It's why people who have breeding and titles and our aristocracy have always been favored. And it's why, you know, if you're from a wealthy family, you get to sit at the front of the church.
Yes.
I mean, all of these things. And it's...
Yes,
it's just. I would hope after all the hundreds of years of evolution, it would get better, but it's actually not getting any better.
Not even for a minute.
And that's why most people in prisons are poor.
Yes,
and most of these kids that are on the wrong path that you're talking to are poor. Not always, but if rich kids start acting up, then their parents send them to some fancy place in Malibu, where they get to wear all white and sit by the ocean and think about their problems. Poor kids just go to jail. And that was something my mom was very passionate about.
Oh, it when you talk to the kids, and in fact, we were told at one point there was one 11-year-old that was incarcerated twice.
Wow.
What could he have done at the age of 11 to be in prison twice?
Right. Yeah, I think you'd be surprised or not.
Our judicial system doesn't work.
I know. And the girls that are in the system, because they start as victims, and then they wind up killing somebody who is probably trying to victimize them, and the next thing you know, they're in the system and they don't know how to get out.
Absolutely.
And that's a shame. It's we need to reevaluate some of that, and hopefully we're getting there. I mean, look how much better we've gotten about the medical profession. You're not allowed to sit by somebody's bed anymore and go, well, you'll be dead in a day. So you're never, this one's never going to walk again. Pass the candy, you know. So.
Well, when I left the hospital, all the nurses that were eating the candy, they all had zits.
Great, yeah, exactly.
They were eating tons of the
chocolate. You were in great shape because you were eating the secret candy underneath that was like supplements. Do you still take supplements?
Oh, by the handful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we both do.
Yeah, I'm always trying to get off as much actual medication as I can and replace with nutrition if I can.
Oh,
you can't always, but sometimes you can.
Yes.
So, as a matter of fact, I take cinnamon every day. When you first came on the show and I spoke, I coughed a little bit and some cinnamon came out my nose. I'm glad you didn't see that. I just told you about it. I looked up and I thought, oh my God, am I on fire? And I was like, oh, it's because I kind of burped a little cinnamon pill. But, you know, cinnamon's good stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
And you'd have to eat an awful lot of stuff with cinnamon to get that much cinnamon in your system. Now you know all my secrets. So when in your life did you realize the importance of giving back?
Well, I keep talking about her, Deanna Marie.
She's wonderful. She's sitting right here. We love her.
She really is. I've never met anyone as kind and so generous. I could get on a bus and not speak to anyone around me.
Okay.
She could get on the same bus, and she's in conversation with everybody on the bus. And she's very thoughtful. She will get up and help somebody who looks like they need help. You're going to get help whether you need it or not. You know, that kind of and it had me thinking about that. I could never be as thoughtful as she is. I'm usually involved in my own head, but she just surprises the heck out of me.
Yeah.
And I keep telling her that.
And how long ago did you meet her?
We've known each other about 5 years.
Okay. So that's really been a kind of a turning point for you in your life in many ways.
Oh, it really
has. What were you like before you met her? How were you different? Well, you'd sit on the bus and not talk to anybody.
Mostly thinking about my career. Where am I working next?
Okay. Typical actor questions.
Absolutely.
Panicking if the phone wasn't ringing and thinking you were no good. Because your whole life revolved around who called.
Yes.
No, seriously. We all go through that as artists, right? We have to grow past that.
And
it's how we're conditioned. You're only important if the phone's ringing.
Exactly.
If the agent's not calling, nobody gives a damn about you, so you don't exist.
Yeah.
You might as well be in the bed and somebody's saying, well, this one's going to be gone in a day.
That's so true.
We all feel like that. Yeah.
Wow.
We have to realize that there's more to us than just whether or not the agent calls. It takes a while.
Well, she's made me feel that way. Even when I was writing my book, which hopefully will be released soon.
Love it.
I'm looking for a good publisher.
Okay.
But I had written some stuff, but she actually sat down and said, what did you do next? And started writing down all the information. I had written a few pages, and, you know, kind of, if I remembered, but she kept probing, said, and what happened before that?
Yeah, like I am now.
Yeah, exactly.
And you always, we've interviewed you before, and, you know, we've been friends for a long time, almost 5 years. I notice when I ask you questions, you stop and you think, which means these are things you don't think about all the time just naturally.
Right.
You're happy to answer, and you're very open if someone asks you the question. But you're not a person who was taught, even with all the therapy you've had, not really taught to constantly be asking questions of yourself all the time.
No. Because there are still so many times I doubt myself. I can't watch myself on television. I can't watch myself in a movie.
Even something that's from a long time ago, like Car 54?
I look and I say, oh, my God, what were you doing?
Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
That's good, though, right? Because there's two kinds of actors. I'm like you. The ones that are like, oh, God, you know, I know this was fun and I'm sure people like it, but I can't look at myself.
Exactly.
And those that literally, it's like emotional masturbation when they look at themselves.
Oh.
And those are the scary narcissistic people. So maybe it's good we're not. Because some people are like, you walk into their house for dinner and they're like, want to see me on this thing? And they pull out, you know what I mean? They've got the TV up and they've got the remote going and the thing comes out and it's like 50 things they've been on you can pick from. That's, you know, wow.
I know.
So
I know.
I'm glad I'm not that person. I'd rather be a little embarrassed and shy than to be.
I blush.
Yeah, I do too.
I become embarrassed. If someone comes over and says, oh, I saw this thing in the thunder, and I go, oh, my God.
Yeah, I've gotten good about my poker face. I'm going, oh, great, thank you. Uh-huh. And that's how I think, oh, my God, you're such a dork, and somebody watched you. But don't you think that there's a spirituality to acting?
Oh,
and
absolutely.
When you're working, whether you're on stage live or you're in front of a camera and you're in that zone, you kind of step into the channel and you do your thing, and it's partially you and partially the universe helping you along. And when it's done, I can't remember any of it. I don't remember what happens when I'm on stage. People say, oh my God, you said that thing at the improv. I'm like, I got nothing. Because you're really working hand in hand with the universe. And it's, you're really kind of in an art trance.
Yes.
I don't know if you're that way, but I don't remember everything that I've done.
Oh, you're in the moment.
Yes.
As they say.
Yeah. But I think there's a spirituality to being in the moment. That it really is sort of when you open that channel inside of you and the universe comes in and you collaborate through the art. And you really are sort of in the isness of it all.
Yeah. I try to explain, when I'm on stage doing my act, I couldn't get any higher if I wanted to.
Yes.
I don't need drugs. You know, hearing the sound of laughter is such a high for me.
Yeah. It's the best, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Why do you think people need drugs to do it?
I don't know.
They miss all of that wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're blocking the channel out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in love with life, and I never was until I met Deanna Marie.
Yay!
Honestly.
So what did you, before you met Deanna Marie, what was your life like in regards to people and...
Dull.
I mean, did you do things? Did you have friends?
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of friends.
You were married a couple times, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. He said that and his eyelashes fell out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But you hung out with people and did things and still went to the parties and the premieres and all the stuff, right?
Yes. And, you know, I was pretty much a loner.
Okay.
In fact, every year I would go to this big martial arts convention. And I'm up with the grandmasters on the dais and having, you know, some fun. But when they would get together afterwards, I would just go to my room.
Oh.
Instead of hanging out and watching guys having drinks and yaha-ing, and it wasn't for me. Now when we go someplace, we stay in a place till they close.
Yeah, you guys even stay longer than me. I leave and you're still there.
Yeah. And we're having fun.
Right. Yeah.
She has opened me up so, where I was so closed off.
Yeah. But do you think if you went without her, you would still be much more introverted?
Introverted, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you probably wouldn't stay and close it down if she wasn't there.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And a couple of times she would say, why don't you, you know, hang out with your friends? Well, I'd get together with a couple of friends of mine and say, okay, we're going to have, you know, we're going out to dinner and I won't be home until quite late. Well, 9 o'clock, I'm home.
Yeah.
You know, did you go out with your friends? Yeah. What did you talk about? Not a lot. We had dinner. We threw a few lines at each other and said, oh my God, look at the time. It's almost 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how the right person's energy can sort of act as a buffer for your introversion?
Absolutely.
So that you can go somewhere and feel okay. It's almost like... why people take tranquilizers when they have social anxiety or, you know, going somewhere with somebody who speaks the language when you don't. It's almost like if somebody speaks your emotional language and your spiritual language,
absolutely,
you can go somewhere with them and they can sort of be a buffer between you and the outside world so that you don't feel so odd and like a fish out of water being around people and making small talk.
It's so true.
Because you strike me as somebody we've had, like every time we're hanging out, we always have some super deep discussion about something, spirituality and near-death experiences, the inner working of Scorpios. But you strike me as somebody who isn't really interested in having surfacey small talk with people about nothing. That you'd rather just be alone in your head than chit-chat niceties at people.
Yes.
You want to have like either a really intense discussion about something or just go be alone and think about that thing in your head.
Absolutely.
And
another thing that I keep telling her, I never sang. I have a good voice. I've sung in shows. When I'm with her, I start singing.
It's great, right?
And it's... When we got married, I sang to her at the wedding. I would never in life think of doing that. Even though, as I said, I've sung in shows and I have an okay voice. But, oh my God.
I think you're happy.
Oh.
And you're allowing yourself to be happy.
Yes.
Was that a road? Was it a road to allowing yourself to give yourself the permission to be happy?
Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling.
Because I remember when I met you guys, and either you just weren't admitting you were together, or you just weren't yet deciding you were together, or you just weren't telling me. But the whole time I kept thinking, who are you two kidding? You're so together. You don't have to actually be together for your souls to be together.
Yeah.
And you guys were always together at that time.
Absolutely.
And I think maybe what you're learning, and sometimes maybe you learn the lesson early in life, and sometimes you learn it later in life, is that there's, you're kind of redefining, Hank, the whole idea of what you thought love was and what you thought partnership was. And this is like that real,
oh, wow,
like love that like you read about in books.
Based on my past experiences.
Right.
Wow. Wow.
Your past marriages maybe were like the kind of love you read about in books about crime. But this is like the different kind. This is kind of the fairy book kind, right? Where
yes.
It's kind of changed your whole life and all you want to do is dance around and sing all the time and ditch your friends and come home. I mean, that's... You're a very lucky man.
I know that. Oh, how well I know. Because my prior marriages was like being sentenced.
Sure.
Yeah.
And who would come and speak to you? Nobody. It was like being sentenced without having you as a speaker to come to the prison and give yourself a pep talk. We have to take a quick break, then we're right back with the wonderful Hank Garrett right after this. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and we're talking about all things, and right now we're talking about love, and that's one of the biggest ways to raise the vibration. We'll be right back. In the meantime, check us out, IamRaisingTheVibration.com, and soon we will be at RaisingTheVibration.org, and we'll see you in just minutes.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
When was the last time a song made a difference in your life? If you're a songwriter who would like to help the victims of the recent hurricanes, your music can make a difference. By offering one song download for just $1, You can help bring aid and hope to those in need. To find out more information and join songwriters Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick in this effort, please visit writersforthestorm.com. That's W-R-I-T-E-R-S forthestorm.com.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linka from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sakula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy. I'm a
child of the 70s. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
California legislator sends Bill SB 524 to Governor Brown to protect youth against institutional abuse. This bill would regulate residential programs notorious for abusing, attempting to convert LGBT youth. Let's be the change. Every child deserves to be treated with dignity and humanity. Stand with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and SEA organization against child abuse. Support SB 524. Go to PYIA.org and let your voice be heard.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
I'm nice to everyone, and some people don't treat me with the respect I want, but I tell them that's okay. They don't care what you guys think about me. I'm perfectly happy being who I am, and I would not change for nobody else, because God made me the person who I am today.
We ask questions and we get answers. NAsks.tv.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. You can find us at raisingthevibrationradio.com. We're at latalkradio.com. And, of course, the movement that started all, it's called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And we're at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. And soon, as we wait for our nonprofit status to get approved, we are going to be at RaisingTheVibration.org. And if you go there now, you can see the site sort of being built, and it's very, very exciting. It's one of my favorite things is to go and see what's new on the site and what they've put up, and it's going to be so beautiful. You'll love it. And social media, I'm just at Sheena Metal everywhere. I'm at SheenaMetal.com. My guest is the wonderful and amazing Hank Garrett. We're talking about everything under the sun, all vibrationally raising stuff. So I asked you this, Hank, at a party once, and we barely knew each other. He's laughing because he's like, oh, God, what is this crazy woman going to say now? And I don't think you'd ever really thought about it. And then I think I asked you about it when I found out that you had had the accident.
Yes.
Because for somebody who doesn't think that until 5 years ago that he was spiritual, you're an incredibly psychic guy, and I don't even know that you know that, but I definitely feel that inside of you. Is that something that you know about yourself, that your intuition and your empathy are kind of off the hook?
I just got feelings, but until you mentioned it, I didn't give it any thought at all.
Yeah.
And now I kind of like pinpoint the feelings.
See, look what I did. Yeah, never occurred to me that you didn't just know that you were by the way that you talked.
No, I never was aware. In fact, Deanna Marie will say to me, what's your feeling about this?
Yeah.
And if I'm not really sure, I will tell her. You know, but if I am positive, then something very, very strong in my gut says, don't do it.
Sure.
But truly, it was because of you.
Sorry. I do that to people. I just assumed it was because when you speak as such a spiritual person. It never would have occurred to me that you were a person who didn't consider yourself spiritual until 5 years ago. I mean,
no idea.
Maybe because you had to grow up in an environment when you were young where if you didn't have good instincts, you would have died.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Maybe you unknowingly developed your intuitive self without knowing that you did. And also your empathy, right? Because if you're in a situation where you could constantly be harmed, you have to always be taking in what's around you as a survival instinct. Plus, Scorpios are just psychic as hell anyhow.
I do. I'm always aware. I'm always checking things out. We go in a restaurant and I scan the restaurant.
Right.
I've always done that.
But that's it. Yeah.
So, and one time, quite a while ago, a bunch of kids were playing stickball, street baseball.
Right.
And a big car pulled in and they blocked our third base. And we asked them, could you please move the car? Yeah. And there were two nefarious gentlemen.
Sure.
And they said, get out of here, you know, move the car. Well, they left to take care of whatever business they were involved in. And my nickname, the street nickname was Crusher.
Okay.
Because I always had a feeling for wrestling. Come to find out that my father was a wrestler in Russia.
Wow.
So we were moving the car, and I felt somebody had kicked me, and I turned around and I threw a punch, and I hit the gentleman in his chest, and he went down.
Oh, you were trying to move the car anyway?
Yeah, we were moving the car off third base.
Okay.
And when he fell, he was reaching into his pocket. His coat pocket, and the guy who was with him said, not here. There were many, many people watching us play a game because we were playing for money. And he looked at me and he said, I'm going to be here a few days. I don't want to see your face. You understand me? I knew who he was after I hit him. Well, I disappeared. Now, a few days later, my buddy and I were coming home from a movie late at night. His name was George Washington Jr. And we were...
not son of same.
So we were walking home, and a car jumped the sidewalk and blocked us. And a guy got out of the car and said to George, beat it. And you don't question.
Yeah, sure.
You go.
You beat it.
And I could never hold him responsible or be angry at him for saving his own life. And the guy I hit stepped out of the car, grabbed me by the collar, and pulled me into a schoolyard. And he pulled a gun, and he stuck it in my face. And he said, I'm going to blow your brains out. You made me look stupid. And that's a big no-no.
Oh, yeah,
making
sure.
Making someone look stupid.
Yeah.
And the guy who was driving the car looked at him and said, do you know who this kid is? And he said, yeah, well, the wise punk, and I'm going to kill him. He said, no, that's Big Sam's kid. Now, I didn't know who Big Sam was, but I said, whatever mistake they made, it was, boy, it's my benefit. And he put the gun away, and he slapped me. And then he just kind of shook his finger at me, and he got in the car, and they drove away. And for the longest time, I kept hearing from other areas, Big Sam. I guess a few years later, I was working a club in City Island, and it was kind of a mob club. I was in the bathroom, putting on makeup, getting ready to do a show. Those days, we all wore makeup.
Sure.
And I saw the bathroom door open. It was in the bathroom, and I was standing behind a partition. And a guy looked in, and he evidently didn't see me, and he ushered an older gentleman in. And the older gentleman came in, took care of business, and I walked out to get ready to do the show, and the guy who ushered him in grabbed me and threw me up against the wall and said, what are you doing in there? I said, I'm Hank Garrett. I'm the comedian on the show. And he said, the older gentleman came out and said, what's going on? He said, I didn't see him. The guy who ushered the old man was a bodyguard. And the old man said, that's your job. You didn't see him. It's not his fault. It's your fault. Let him alone. Take your hands off him. And he invited me to his table. And he said, sit down. Have a drink. And I said, I don't drink. Would you, something to eat? I said, okay.
Hank always says yes to something to eat.
So he said, what's your name? And I said, Hank Garrett. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm the comedian on the show. He said, where do you live? I said, 111th between Park and Lexington. 118 East 111th. He said, your last name? I said, Garrett. He says, there's no Garretts at 111th Street. I said, yeah, that's my name. He said, you're either lying to me about where you live or you're lying to me about your name. He said, did you change your name? I said, yeah, it was Greenberg, and now it's Garrett. He said, Greenberg? Is your father named Sam? He was a Don.
Oh, yeah. Dad did more than sell vegetables.
Yes. So I didn't know this.
Wow.
And I said, he said, Big Sam is your father? The Big Sam, my father? And he said, the toughest Jew I ever met.
Oh.
I said, my father who cries when it rains? He said, believe me, he's a tough, tough guy. He said, when you go home, tell your dad, and I won't mention his name right now.
Yeah.
That Vincent says hello. I walked home and I said to my father, oh, Vincent says hello. He said, who? I said, Vincent, and I mentioned him. He said, don't know who you're talking about. Never knew what the connection was. And we lived in abject poverty.
Yeah, whoever he was working for, they weren't taking very good care of you.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think he was just a good friend. And at one point, I know at one point, they were trying to shake him down on something. I learned this from one of my older brothers. There was a paper shortage during the Second World War. And they had access to a warehouse full of paper bags.
Okay.
And they approached my father about being a link between between them and the people who were peddlers who needed paper bags. And my father said, "No, that's black market, and I won't do it."
Oh.
He said, "I got two kids overseas fighting right now. I can't get involved in black market."
Well, maybe that's why they knew him, because they tried to shake him down and he kept standing up for himself.
Yeah. And they, at one point, my brother Saul said, they offered Pop $100,000 because they had several million dollars worth of bags. They have a warehouse full. And he said no.
Wow.
I said, we didn't have food.
Yeah.
At one time.
Yeah, but you talk about a life of crime. That's a slippery slope to get involved in.
Oh, absolutely.
And he probably knew that.
Yeah.
One minute you got $100,000, and the next minute you come home, the whole family's dead.
Yeah.
You do something somebody doesn't like, and they take everybody out.
But they respected him.
I bet.
And they respected my mom, Ida. They called her mom. All the mob guys.
That's cool.
The families of the mob guys, the mothers and the grandmothers, used to come over to my mom and they'd say, "Oh, Ida, I need some stuff, but I didn't bring my bag with me." And my mother would say, "Oh, you'll pay me when you have it." They would tell their sons, who were mob guys,
right,
and they would come over to see my mother. And they said, "Ma, what do we owe you?" She said, "Come on."
It's wonderful.
Oh. She was she was something else.
Wow.
Tough.
Do you think you learned those instincts from them? Always scanning the room? Always checking out for what's going on around you? Looking for danger sometimes to make sure you're safe?
Well, that I picked up on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you never knew if you were coming back. So much of it, so much death, beatings and stabbings, and it became a daily occurrence. You know, at first we would talk about it, and then after a while, you think that's something. You know what I thought?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it gets to be a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Myself and a buddy of mine, Gilbert Montana, who was half Puerto Rican, half Italian, and he and I ran the school. Oh, man. We were two biggest guys. He was fighting pro when he was 15 years old.
Wow.
No one knew that he was 15.
Boxing?
Boxing.
Wow.
And he was knocking out pros.
Wow.
And so he and I. Oh, man.
Wow. Now, did you feel, when you got into show business, did you feel like you fit in? Or did you feel like a fish out of water there?
I felt like a fish out of water.
Different business, right?
Oh,
where
yeah.
People make
absolutely.
A lot of threats and don't follow up with anything and talk a lot and don't act much.
Absolutely.
It's the complete opposite of sort of the way you grew up.
Exactly.
Don't keep things to themselves. People squeal. I mean, you know, you grow up on the street, you better be quiet. Somebody hears you squeal and you'll disappear. But in our business, it's all blah, 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 people having no filter.
Yeah, we had an honor. We really, really had a code. You know, don't lie to me.
Well, and that may be why your natural go-to is to keep things to yourself.
Absolutely.
And here I am making you talk about all this.
My mother, she said, when the words are still in your mouth, they're yours.
Yeah.
When the words come out of your mouth, they belong to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom used to say, don't write anything down you don't want the whole world to see.
Yeah.
And it's smart, right?
Oh, yeah.
It makes me think. And, you know, when in our world, especially now with social media and also with doing interviews, you have to be careful about what you put out there. And you have to think about when you put something out there, it's going to last forever and ever and ever. And you have to think about what you say and the way that you say it. You know, if you don't have a public life, if you're not a public person, you can get on Twitter or Facebook and troll till the cows come home. No one knows who you are. It's never going to come back at you. But if you have a personal life, if you have a public life, or you think you're going to have a public life, you have to be very careful about what you say, because
absolutely.
Everything you say can influence other people. It can influence kids that you speak to that might not do the right thing because of something they read that you said. You might come and give a great talk, and then they go on your Twitter, and it's all negative. It changes the way they feel about you. It can change if you get a job or not. You know, it's in a way, I think social media and the internet has turned us all into diplomats, because we have to think about what we do and say before we do.
Absolutely.
Which is probably great. I was talking to my guest earlier on my daily show today about shaming and how shaming is almost always wrong. But there are times when people as a whole, as a species, need to be either scared or shamed into something. And if not, they'll just run wild. You know, we can be a very dangerous primate.
Oh, absolutely.
And the fear of jail, the fear of ostracization, the fear of God, whatever the fear is or the shame is, the shame from a religious organization or society, sometimes that gives people edges and makes them behave. And this, and the internet has become sort of another subtle passive-aggressive judge and jury, right?
Yes.
Where you have to be really careful what you put on that thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's going to live there forever.
You know, I started studying martial arts when I was 11.
Okay.
For the wrong reasons. I wanted to be a better street fighter. But I learned respect and humility. And I tell the kids that. Get involved in the martial arts. It will turn you around.
It's beautiful.
And that's what I've been preaching to them, hoping that they will follow suit.
Now, do you still actually do the martial arts?
No, but I still...
Do you practice the spirituality of it?
I've been teaching the animal.
Okay. That's good, right? It's a very centering Zen thing, right?
Oh, it really is. A gentleman who was one of my mentors, his name was Gene LaBell. Gene is in his mid-80s.
Okay.
Probably considered the toughest man ever.
Wow.
He had 300 judo matches and beat everybody in the world.
Wow.
I mean, went in different countries all over the world and beat their champs.
Wow.
Sweetest man you'd ever want to meet. And how many people he turned around that came to him. All his students have gone on to teach others.
That's beautiful. Did you ever teach?
I did. I had a dojo, a gym in New York.
Oh, wow.
And I taught little ones.
That's fantastic. How long have you been out here?
I came out here in the 80s, early 80s. I had a series with James Earl Jones.
Okay.
That's what brought me to California. Yeah, we had a series called Paris.
Okay.
He was a captain of police who taught criminology at a local college. And I was a deputy chief inspector, his boss.
He's wonderful, right? What a wonderful actor he is.
We had a wonderful time together. Now, the funniest thing in the world is he was also the voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah, sure he was, yeah.
I had a big party at my house when I had a house, and I invited the cast and crew of the show. My son, Brandon, who was 6 years old, was in his room, and he had a Darth Vader helmet. James walked in, saw my son. He picked up the helmet. He put the helmet on.
Oh, my God. That's great.
And he did the voice.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I looked through the door, and all I saw was my son's gaping mouth.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He just couldn't close his mouth. He was in.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now, the next morning, I get a call from Brandon's school teacher. Mr. Garrett said, yes. This is Mrs. Finan. Your son has a rather vivid imagination.
Oh, no.
I said, what? Well, he's downright lying to the other children.
Uh-oh.
I said, what did he say? He said that Darth Vader was in his bedroom last night. And I said, well, he was. And I heard click.
Oh, my goodness.
And I imagine her telling all the other teachers, that family is nuts.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So
that's wonderful. And you just decided to stay?
Just
loved it here in Los Angeles?
Oh, James? No, he's back in New York.
No. But you stayed. You came out for that series and you stayed?
Yeah.
You never went back?
No.
What about L.A. made you stay?
I met a lady.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's what brought me, and I met this lady, and Brandon was my adopted son.
Okay.
He was not quite 3 years old. His dad had passed, and I married his mom.
Okay.
And so I stayed, much to my regret.
Oh, you're sorry you stayed?
Oh, God, yes.
But if you hadn't stayed, you wouldn't have met Deanna Marie.
That's for sure.
See?
And our story is incredible.
How did you meet?
We met at an event. Someone had hired me to perform as a comedian.
Okay.
And they offered me a very, very little money. And I said no. I turned it down. And she said, well, if I give you a table where you can sell autographed pictures and videos, because I raise funds for disabled vets. So I said, okay. And I saw this redheaded beauty zipping around the place. I thought she was the hostess. She was at every table saying hello and how are you. And I asked the gentleman, who is that? And he said, her name is Deanna Marie. I said, she's fascinating. She came over to my table. And what had happened, she had hired a videographer. And he came over and he wanted to video my act. And I said, no, you cannot. Because I write my own material. And I said, I'll lose so much material to other comedians. And that's happened in the past. Well, Deanna Marie came over to my table to raise hell with me. Okay. And I explained why I would not let the videographer video my performance. And she was interested in purchasing a copy of Car 54. I have the videos.
Okay.
She was going to send it to a friend.
Okay.
She didn't have a wallet with her or whatever. And someone had given her my number. She called me. And I said, I will give you a copy, and I had, if you will go to lunch with me.
Oh, look at you go. You're moving right in there, Scorpio. Wasting no time at all, holding the video over her head.
Well, and it just has been marvelous ever since.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
That's beautiful. It's like a soul connection, right? Like you just knew knew her.
Absolutely.
Even before you knew her, you knew you knew her. It's absolutely a soul connection. I mean, I believe that we have what I like to call our soul pod, which is all our folks that when we're not on the earth at soul school, they're our family at home. And we run into each other down here. And we know each other because we've traveled with each other through however many lives.
Amazing. Amazing.
And I think that's what you guys knew right away. Well, you knew right away.
Well, it's...
You, who's not a spiritual guy.
Yes, exactly.
Had that spiritual connection and chased that girl down.
The funny thing is, we lived in New York, a few blocks from away from each other at different times.
But there's that soul pod thing. You could have met then. You could have met the other time.
She lived in London. She was there for 7 years. I was in London doing, that was the week that was, with David Frost. We never met. She lived in Holland. I was shooting a film in Holland. We never met.
Right. Right timing had to be the right timing.
Exactly.
Because that wouldn't have been the right timing.
No.
It had to be till you were at a place where you were ready to accept what she had.
Yes.
And when you were younger, tougher, angrier, you wouldn't have been ready to accept this. You would have talked yourself out of it.
You're right. You're right. Absolutely.
And so this was the magic time when you were ready. And I think the universe makes sure, right? A lot of times that you don't meet each other so that you don't screw it up.
It faded.
Right. Wow. Exactly.
Wow.
Do you miss New York? Do you miss the energy of it?
I'm sorry?
Do you miss New York? Do you miss the energy of it?
Yes, I do.
It's a whole different energy, right?
Oh, it completely. There is energy. Here it's lethargy.
Okay. This is too sleepy for you?
Yeah.
This tiny little backwoods city of 30 millions, too sleepy for you?
It's wonderful. It's so alive.
Yeah.
In fact, I've forgotten who it was who said, what is the difference between yogurt and Los Angeles?
Oh.
And they said the difference is that yogurt has a live culture.
Yeah, I thought it was that once you take out the cream, the rest is just fruits and nuts.
You're right.
That was the difference. Yogurt has a live culture. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's.
But you see, I think it's very alive here. This is a very spiritual city. You can feel the spirituality coming up under the ground. It's crazily spiritual. And so I think for those of us that resonate spiritually and that our spirituality is sort of our rudder, this place feels really good. Whereas in New York, I think all of the stimulus of the three-dimensional world sometimes can get in the way of that. You know, in New York, you're just trying to survive, trying to get from this place to that place and not get run over. You're trying to get from here to here and not sit in 8 hours of traffic. You're trying to get from here to here and not freeze to death. You know, so you're trying to navigate through the walking with all the people and not kill everybody. So I think that it's just a different, it's a different culture. For people that are much more into the isness of being right here and locked into the earth, I think New York is a much better energy. Because when I go back to New York, and I'm from New Haven, when I go back to New York, the first day and a half, I'm like, that's it. I'm getting a place here. I'm living bi-coastally, and I'm going back and forth. And by the fourth day, I'm like, God, I just want to go back to LA so bad. So, you know, I love it at the beginning because I'm so in love with it, and it's such a part of my childhood memories. But by the fourth day, I hate that I can't see out. I have to see up.
Oh.
And I just want to go somewhere and see like a hill or a dirty old desert scrub brush or something. And I just want to be able to be near the Pacific Ocean. Because the Atlantic is angry. She's a whole different lady than the Pacific.
True.
I mean, there are places where the Pacific is really nasty. But this isn't one of them. The coast of California is not a place where the Pacific is really evil. But the coast of the northeast of North America really is a place where the Atlantic just has a raging case of PMS most of the time. And she even looks different. She's kind of gray and she's kind of scowling at you all the time. The Pacific's like, come on in and surf and I'm warm, but, you know, just ignore the sharks. But the Atlantic's like, you know what? This is I'm mad at you, and plus I have sharks, so I just think that there's something about the, I'm just in love with this area, but I get it. I still have that residual love of the Northeast.
Oh, absolutely.
I love that people in the Northeast, they do what they say they're going to do, and they're not, there's not so much wishy-washy.
Exactly.
I miss that.
Yes.
You know, everything doesn't have to be, well, can it just be a yes or a no once? I don't need to hear for 15 minutes about why you might say yes or you might say no. Just say yes, say no, or tell me to go screw myself. But just do it.
Oh, yeah.
So that I miss. But there's a lot of us out here that get that and live with that ethic.
the guys I grew up with, you know, all New York guys. Then a friend of mine called me when I first came out here to do this show. What are you doing over there?
Right, yeah.
And in fact, I had my two adopted brothers. I was in London, and I was doing that was the week I was. And they called me and they said, Mama said you were over there. Yeah. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm doing a show call. That was the week that was. Yeah, but what? I said, well, he said, but you don't speak the language.
Well, then there's that, right?
I said, yes, they speak English. Well, come on. You understand that? Well, a spot of tea? Come on. You going to take a lift? Wait.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still close with a lot of your New York folks?
Oh, God, yes.
Isn't that wonderful? Do you go to visit a lot?
We haven't been in a while.
Okay. I think you need to go.
Oh,
I think you're missing it big
time.
Well,
we were going to be going, but there's a big martial arts convention coming up in 2 weeks.
Okay.
We bowed out because of what's happening now with this massive storm.
Yes. Yeah, it's scary. We're just having a baby storm here, and everyone's life is falling apart. Three drops of rain.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. The Los Angelinos freaking out. It's raining. I can't go anywhere. Three drops of rain fell. I'm in for 2 weeks now.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's craziness. Even my plants on the back patio were like, what is this falling on us? It's the end of the world. I'm like, you guys, it's rain. Be good. You are completely magic, my friend. Will you come and we'll do this again?
Oh, God, I'd love to.
Where can people find you online? Oh, you know. You don't know where you can be found online? You are such a Scorpio.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you just like float through the world doing good? You're like, I don't know where you can find me online. I'm just loving people.
Well, the best place is to reach Deanna Marie.
Okay. I know she's on Facebook. Do you have a website yet?
No, I'm not on Facebook.
No, you're not on Facebook, but she is.
Oh, I guess I am.
Yeah, the manager's
on
Facebook.
She handles that all, and it's amazing.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You're such a water sign, living in the ethers.
You want to reach me, you call me in the candy store.
But don't take the candy from the bottom layer, because it's just supplements. And that's, look, see, there's your site. I can't believe you don't know this. It's hankgarrett.biz, everybody.
Oh, .biz, yeah.
And it smells good because Deanna Marie just handed it to me.
I keep using the other one.
Yeah, .biz. You're such an artist, my friend. You are wonderful, and I can't wait for you to come back, and I adore you, and I thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you.
And for being a part of the show. And you, we just talked during the break that you have graciously agreed to be on our advisory board.
Oh, absolutely.
For RaisingTheVibration.org, and I'm so honored to have you. It wouldn't be the same without you, so I'm thrilled that you're doing it.
Thank you so much.
And you are one of my favorite things about seeing you every year at Christmas at our mutual friend Patty Negri's house. If you missed any of the links for Hank Garrett, well, of course, we know it's at hankgarrett.biz. Also, you can go to sheenametal.com. That's me. And, of course, raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com, and the movement that started all, it's I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And we're at iamraisingthevibration.com. And soon we're at raisingthevibration.org. Also, we have a wonderful online community. We started it on October 29th. And we are now almost 12,000 strong in that period of time. All people that have joined us to help raise the vibration of the nation and the world. And that's at thevibrationnation.com. Please join us there. And how exciting is all of that? So please go all those places and find even more places that you can go from there and get to know some of our vibrational family. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. Thank you, Hank, so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're so special to me, and it's such an honor to have you here. Here's the thing, folks. Until I see you next Monday from 7 to 9 p.m., here's what you can do for me. Always keep peace in your heart. Always think of how you can make the world a more peaceful place. And every minute of your life, live in love. It's just as easy to live in love as it is to live out of love. And as much love as you think there is in the world, there's still not nearly enough love, and there should be so much more. Seek it, find it, be in it, live in it. Hold those that you love close to you. Also, always lead with kindness. Even if kindness is never returned, turn around and lead with kindness the next time. If all of us in our lives just became 5% kinder every day, the tsunami of kindness that would sweep over the world and envelop us all would be so amazing that you can't even believe. And the last thing you can do for me is to think of all of us in this Homo sapiens species as one human family that is equal in all things and absolutely beautifully diverse perpetually. Until we start to think of ourselves as one and start to realize that we are all in this together, we are never going to get this right. And it's all about what is best for everybody on the earth, and we need to really start thinking that way. Thank you for spending this 2 hours with me and with Hank tonight. And we'll see you next Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on LA Talk Radio for Raising the Vibration. I'm your host, Sheena Metal, and I love you all. Thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.